is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hello and welcome to the Hoop Heads Podcast. It's Mike Lindsay here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are going to do a little second round reaction pod at halftime of the Warriors-Rockets game. So, Jason, let's start out by rewinding to the end of the only series we did not know the finish to when we did our last show, which was the Denver-San Antonio series.
Greg Popovich, what you doing, bro? I don't quite get that. It was so funny because he was like waving his arms at them, trying to get them. Apparently they couldn't hear him. Like Denver apparently was that loud, I guess. I mean, it didn't seem like they were that loud on the TV. Did it seem like they were that loud on the TV?
I don't know. It didn't seem like you couldn't hear, but it also seems like at some point the players have to take a little bit of responsibility too. I know Pop has to be more urgent, let's say, in getting the team to foul. But as I sat there and watched that, the last 20 seconds, usually the last 20 seconds of a game takes like 10 minutes. And so you're sitting there and they're just letting the clock go. Then they get the rebound. They don't call timeout. They got the rebound with like 4 seconds left.
It was very reminiscent of the J.R. Smith gaffe.
It was, I don't know. It wasn't quite to that level. It was different because the J.R. Smith was just a singular moment of like, what are you doing? Versus this was 20 seconds of presumably all five guys on the floor and the coaching staff. Nobody saw it, you know, saw to it that they fouled. Yeah. It was crazy. It made
very bizarre. And then it's so unlike San Antonio to be out of position or not know what's going on. Very bizarre.
Yeah. It was very, very strange. Cause again, you, even when teams are down, like, 7 or 8, a lot of times they'll foul in the last 20 seconds. And the fact that they were down 4, didn't foul, it was mind boggling. I watched it and I'm like, did I just see that? It made no sense to me.
Yeah. And
so I guess in that respect, San Antonio deserved to lose.
Yeah. And I think the big thing that this totally overshadowed the fact that Jokic once again came through, had a triple double, played really, really well. And we'll get to the second round series, Mike, but I think you would agree what I thought would happened last night is no one could guard on Portland could guard Jokic.
Yeah, Jokic has been – he's been to me the most, I don't know if surprising, because obviously he had a great regular season, but I had a hard time envisioning that the things that he did would translate as well as they have to the postseason. He's been phenomenal. And,
yep.
You know, I think this series certainly allows him to continue that because Portland just doesn't have everybody that can deal with him.
Come on,
so.
Enes Kanter with the separated shoulder and let's slam dunk on the first possession of the game and hurt ourselves. That was really intelligent.
But it wasn't the dunk that hurt it.
It was holding onto the rim.
It was when he hung on the rim with his left arm. You got to be pretty dumb to do that. Yeah. So, sorry, Enes.
So I guess we'll just finish with that. I know we were going to go in a different order, but we might as well just talk about that since we're there already.
Okay,
so
let's do it.
The Denver, I mean, I stayed up and watched that whole thing last night. I thought it was a really good game. And I have to say, Mike, all four series so far, I think all four of these series are going to be good series. Like, if you just look at them, they've all been competitive. Tonight, the Milwaukee game got a little out of hand, but I thought last night was a competitive game, and both teams were in it most of the way, and it was compelling, and I think that's good. It's especially good for the NBA because of the fact that their ratings are way down this year, and I know that's part of the LeBron effect, but the last time I saw, they were at this point through the postseason, they're down 27% in the viewership. So I think it's really important that they do have compelling series, and I think all four of these series have storylines and are kind of interesting, in my opinion, at least. I don't know what you think, but
yeah, I think the one that we're watching now, the Rockets Warriors, although it might be the theoretical two best teams, I still watch Golden State, and I just don't know how you beat those guys when they're playing at their best. There's no way they're going to be touched.
You can't even dislocate a finger and
throw yeah. Them, so. Nah. So we'll jump back to that game in a second, but I agree. I think. What makes the series, each of the, at least the other three, compelling to me is that there's lots of different ways that the teams can play against each other. There's lots of different ways that they can match up offensively and defensively. I think a lot of it in all of the series swings on who makes threes. You know, if your shot goes down like Milwaukee's did tonight, you're in good shape. If you're missing your threes, I'm not sure what you're going to do. But the Denver-Portland one, Lillard had 39. Jokic had another great game. I think those two are going to continue to produce. It's going to be a matter of who the second and third guys are for each of those teams. Jokic is just going to continue, I think, to have his way. And, that was a great performance by Denver. It really was, considering that Portland had more rest. Denver was coming off only one day and an emotional seven-game series win. So if you're a Denver fan, I think you got to feel good about where you're at. I still think that I still pick Portland to win that series. Although after last night, it looks a little shakier than what I might have thought. So yeah.
We'll see what happens. So I agree. I think I picked Denver, and I'm going to stick with Denver. Obviously, after they won a game, I'm not going to change my pick. And I just think once again, Jokic is just going to be too much. And when you've got the best player to stop him is an injured Enes Kanter. I just don't know that there's someone that's going to be able to do it. So
yeah, it's not a good matchup. And Denver, lots of Denver's role players last night played well, and role players typically play better at home. Denver's got home court advantage. There's definitely signs that point to the fact that Denver was the number two seed all year. They were right near the top of the conference, and so I still think Portland's going to win it just because I have faith in Lillard that he's going to get it done. But Denver looked good last night for sure. Yep.
All right, so we'll shift to the Eastern Conference matchup between Boston and Philly. Now, I'll be completely transparent when I say I did not watch much of the first game.
You mean Toronto-Philly.
Oh, Toronto-Philly, I'm sorry. I did not watch much of the first game. I know we were texting back and forth. I know that Kawhi hit 45 points, and he looked very dominant. But then in game two, it was like a complete role reversal. Jimmy Butler kind of took care of business. I feel like he put the team on his back. 30 points, 11 rebounds, and just produced. And, you have to be encouraged that they won that game when Embiid only had 12 and Simmons only had 6. That's got to be encouraging for 76ers fans. They both didn't play very well in the grand scheme of things. I mean, Embiid was, what was he from the field? Embiid only took 7 shots. How is that possible? How do they play a game where Joel Embiid only takes 7 shots? That's mind blowing.
If you watch that game, I didn't watch very much of game one either, but I watched most of game two, and it was striking to watch Ben Simmons play that game and just pass up, I mean, not just outside shots, but basically just passing up layups. I mean, he would create and get to the basket, and then he'd be right there with an opportunity to finish, and then he would just dish it out.
Okay. Now, I know you're the king of box score, Mike. Do you know who the second leading scorer on Philly was yesterday?
James Ennis.
Yeah, 13 points.
Ennis had a really good game. He was huge. I mean, he made a couple of threes at very, very key, moments. And without him, they don't win that game.
Is TJ McConnell not injured?
He's just out of the rotation there.
He was such a huge role player for them. How is he out of the rotation? I believe
he's been deprocessed.
Okay. All right. I take TJ McConnell on the Cavs, although we already have a TJ McConnell in Dellavedova, so I don't know that we need him, but I don't know. I feel like I liked McConnell last year. I don't know. And this year when I saw him in the regular season. But anyways, Toronto didn't have – I mean, Kawhi once again had a great game yesterday, 35 points. And Siakam, once again, great game, 21 points. And I have to say, Mike, Lowry hit like 3 threes in a row in the fourth quarter there. It was like, whoa, Kyle Lowry, hello.
Welcome
to the playoffs.
I agree. He did hit a couple big threes, but then – with that possession with like 16 seconds to go where he tried to dribble through, I forget who was guarding him, Tobias Harris. I think he tried to dribble through Tobias Harris's legs and turned it over.
That's a good move, man. That's a good move.
That is not a good move.
We're going to be teaching those moves at Head Start Basketball Camp this summer.
That is not a good move. And Siakam shot, I think it took him 23 shots to get 21 points.
25
shots. All right. So yeah, he had 21 points, but he wasn't very efficient. He wasn't nearly as good as he was the game before. And Gasol was like 1 for 6. So they got nothing out of him. And
Green 1 for 8.
Yeah, the rest of Toronto's lineup after Kawhi was not good. And Kawhi really got Simmons did a really good job on him, at least on the first quarter, of keeping him from getting the ball and making him work. And I think they did a much better job on him in the second game than they did in the first one, despite the fact he still had 35. And I don't know. I see this series going back and forth. I mean, I could see him splitting the two games in Philly, and I definitely could see this game coming down to the seventh game. And then, you know, can Kawhi carry Toronto versus the sort of smorgasbord of players that Philly has, and who's going to come through in a big moment? Obviously yesterday was Butler, and I don't know. I think that I still think that's a 7-game series. I'm sticking with Philly. Last night, I liked a lot of what I saw, despite the fact that they weren't playing at their best. It seems like, you know, for all the worry about their chemistry issues and their problems and whatever, it really does seem like they're together. And I don't see any real issues developing out there on the floor where guys are griping at each other. It seems like no matter what's happening, even when Toronto went on a couple of runs in the second, third quarter, and then another one in the fourth where they cut it back down to one, it didn't really look like Philly was panicked. It didn't look like they were pointing fingers at each other. It really looked like they were together. And I think if they're together, the talent and the size that they have is just immense. And so I'm going to stay with my pick of Philly pulling that out in 7, but I think it's going to go back and forth. And there's just lots of different adjustments that can be made by the coaches in terms of how they match up and who's hot in a given game and what they can do. So I think that's going to be, that series to me is has the most interesting matchups and the way that the game can be coached from game to game.
All right. I'm sticking with Toronto, Mike. That's all right. I do.
All right.
The next series, Milwaukee Boston, and I can sum up the Milwaukee Boston series in 2 words: third quarter. Because in the first game, the third quarter, the Boston Celtics outscored Milwaukee by 20 points, ended up winning by 22. In the third quarter tonight, Milwaukee outscored Boston by 21 points and won by 21 points. So I think that's what it's going to come down to. Who wins the third quarter is going to win the series, Mike.
That's great analysis. I like it.
I still think obviously Giannis is the best player on either team. He was really absent in the first game.
He was terrible in the first game. He was terrible.
And he was good tonight. 29-10. I didn't look at the box score.
He went to the basket hard, I thought, today, and tried to make some adjustments in terms of how he was using his Euro step and getting to the basket. And he looked much more comfortable. The other day, he looked like he thought he was still playing against Detroit, and he couldn't believe that guys were actually moving their feet and getting in front of him. And he didn't react well to that. And I thought tonight he played better. It still comes down to, though, for Milwaukee, that I think – I don't know how many threes they ended up with, but I know at some point in the fourth quarter they had a – team record 17 threes in the game.
It makes 20 out of 47.
All right. So, if they're going to knock down 20 threes in a game, I got news for the Celtics. You're not beating them. If they're
Middleton
gonna knock
shot 7 for 10, Mike.
Yeah, he's good. Middleton's good. And he kills Boston. He killed them last year. He's just a tough matchup for them. Just with his ability to shoot the ball and his size and length. Threes going in made a big difference for Milwaukee. Bledsoe played much better. He was terrible in game one. He came out and played much better here in game two. And so I still think Boston is going to struggle against the Bucks when, especially if Brogdon comes back. I know Brogdon was on the bench. I was kind of in and out of putting my kids to bed and trying to watch the game, and so didn't really hear what the commentary was in terms of Brogdon's potential availability for game three. But I know that's kind of what they were targeting. So if he comes back, gives Milwaukee one more guy in their rotation, I still like the Bucks. I know both of us said Bucks in 5.
I'm going 6 now. I'm bumping to 6.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to sweep both games in Boston. I would be very surprised. I might want to amend mine to Milwaukee in six, but I'm sticking with the Bucks. I'm still riding with the Bucks. I think they're gonna. I think tonight helped them kind of get over the hump of, hey, we can beat a good team and do the things we did in the regular season, and still, you know, come out on top against a quality playoff opponent instead of the Detroit Pistons. So
yeah, I will say, I mean, it really helps that Kyrie shot 4 of 18 tonight. Kyrie was terrible.
Yeah, Kyrie was terrible tonight. I mean, that obviously helps. I mean, there's no question if the other team's best player has a bad night. It was sort of the opposite of what happened in game one where
Tatum was 2 for 10. So, you know,
what's happened to Tatum?
Dude, he's regressed. Like,
he's terrible.
Like, this is a crazy question that I'm going to ask you. Would you rather have Jason Tatum or Colin Sexton at this current moment?
I mean, I still think that I thought you were going to say Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum. I still think you'd probably rather have Tatum just because of his length and the potential that he has as a scorer. Sexton, I don't know. I'm still not convinced that Sexton isn't a good stats, bad team guy in the long run, just because he doesn't have an innate feel for being a passer and he's only 6'2". His ceiling on a good team might be to be your third guard, your Vinnie Johnson, Bad Boys, Pistons, microwave off the bench. But I don't know. Tatum has not been good. He has not been good. He wasn't good all season, at least compared to what he was last year. And now in the playoffs, he's done next to nothing. And it's amazing that when they went to the Eastern Conference Finals last year, I mean, he was the guy. I mean, he was their main guy.
Is it a fact that there's so many guys now that are trying to get minutes, like Hayward and all that?
I just think he's an afterthought. I mean, I don't even look for him half the time. I mean, he certainly doesn't feel like an integral part of what they're trying to do.
Okay, so who is the leading scorer for Boston tonight? Do you know the answer to that? Did you look at the box score?
I did not look at the box score. Let me think. Now, again, I was in and out of the game. If I had to guess, I don't know. I have no idea.
Marcus Morris.
I did see him can a couple threes. How many threes did he make?
He had it with 17 points. He was 3 for 4 on the 3-point land.
All right, I did see him bang home a couple threes. So, well, if that tells you, if one of the Morris twins is your leading scorer,
here's the problem.
He's not going to have much success.
Al Horford and Marcus Morris made 6 threes between the two of them. They each made 3. The rest of the team made 4.
Yeah. When one team makes 20 and the other team makes what, 7?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're not winning that game very often. It's not too often that's going to happen. So
all right, we're moving on. This game is going to get out of hand here soon, Mike. I think.
What's the score now?
It's only 10 points, but I mean, listen, I think this all comes down to both these teams are so unlikable at this point.
I agree. I don't want to watch either one of them. I do because I want to see them lose, but
oh my gosh, they're whining about everything. I mean, like, it gets irritating. Like, Kevin Durant literally just friggin' basically, oh boy, Harden just got Durant pretty good, but Durant literally just tackled a guy who was trying to dunk, okay? And acted like it was completely clean when they got called up for a foul. It's
getting to the point now.
How much Kevin Durant has turned into a heel, Mike. Like, I used to love watching Kevin Durant play when he played for OKC. And I mean, even when he was playing in Texas and obviously the first year with Seattle, like I loved watching Kevin Durant play. Now he's such a heel. I really hope that it's true that he's leaving because I can't take him being on this team anymore. I want him to be likable again. And he's just not likable.
Yeah, nobody's likable on those two teams, in my opinion. Everybody complains on every single thing that happens. And again, they're not the only two teams where that happens, but it just seems like there's just a preposterous amount of complaining and arguing and gesticulating, and it's crazy. And I don't know. I don't enjoy watching it, and I hope that I mean, I'm still rooting for Houston. I don't think Houston's not going to beat Golden State. There's no way. Maybe one of those teams in the East, by the time they get there, they'll have their confidence up, and maybe one of those two teams or maybe one of those teams can give them a run for their money. But I won't be surprised now if this Houston series I mean, I know I picked Houston before, but that's a homer rooting for Houston pick. Yeah. I don't know. Golden State's just too good. When they're at their peak, they're really tough to beat.
Durant's just unstoppable. He's getting every shot that he wants. There's nothing that any team can do. I think Milwaukee is a little bit interesting because I think Giannis can guard Durant a little bit and at least like try to stop him. But I don't think anyone on any other team can guard Durant.
I think Simmons could give him a little bit of a battle too. So I think one of those two teams.
So it's gonna be sad. It's gonna be sad if they do get to the finals, Mike. And we're gonna stay. Of course, this is hypothesizing that Milwaukee gets to the finals, but that the best defender that guarded Durant in the playoffs was going to be Giannis probably, and then the second best defender is going to be a guy half his size, Patrick Beverley.
Yeah, agreed.
That's a problem.
That is a problem.
So I mean, right now it's 73-63, 7 minutes left. Everything's going in the Warriors' favor. You want to talk at all about the fouls or non-foul calls at all in game one? Like, what's your take? Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm a fan of, I don't want guys coming in underneath somebody who's shooting, but I'm also not a fan of the guys who kick out their feet 7 feet in front of them. And you just can't do that. Like the last play with Harden.
That wasn't a foul. I think the first two that Harden had, when the one with Clay came underneath him and the one that I think it was Durant. I can't remember, but the first two times when they came underneath him, I felt like those were fouls. I feel like the other three that were there contested, those were not fouls in my opinion. I think Harden tried to sell it because they didn't call the first two. And that's what, you know, and it goes back to the whole boy who cried wolf situation. And I think that hurts him in a sense that, you know, people are so used to him flailing around that they're not going to give him. And these referees are trained at this point. They're only reffing two teams or, you know, they're only reffing two series.
Right. They can zero in on the type of calls they want to make.
Well, that, and they know the tendencies of the players. So they know what they're going to call and what the players tend to do. And if you watch Harden flail around as much as he has in the past, you're just not going to give him those benefit of the doubt on those calls. And I don't think he didn't play a lot in the first quarter tonight, but he's only gotten to the line, I think, two times, and both times were on drives to the basket. Nothing has been on those shots that he's drawn so many fouls before.
Yeah, he's getting a lot less of those calls off his step-back jump shot in the playoffs than he was during the regular season. And again, I believe guys got to have room to land, but I also think that all this kicking and, you know, all this, Jimmy Butler had two of them last night. One, I think they called, and the other one they didn't, where, I mean, he's up in the air and he's clearly just trying to kick someone to create contact and then falling to the ground.
Here's a question. If he kicks him in the groin, does he get suspended?
I don't know. He didn't kick him in the groin. He was kicking him in the shins, but it was just like, it was so obvious that, you know, when you watch it on replay, how he's kicking the guy. And I don't know. I'm just not a big fan of all the whining. I'm not a big fan of trying to put the onus on the officials to impact the game in that kind of way. I mean, just play the game and let the referees make their calls, keep your mouth shut and keep playing and try to compete and try to win. And that's, yeah, it's the same thing I would teach an 8-year-old. It seems like you got to teach professional players to do the same thing. So it's too bad because it takes away from the quality of the game, and it's not as enjoyable to watch when every single time the whistle blows, there's multiple guys making faces or running to the end of the floor, putting their hands on the top of the head. It just gets old watching that, and it's too bad. And it's too bad because also those guys are setting an example for younger players, and it's not good. It's not good for the game to have all that stuff going on. And so I don't know how the league polices it. I mean, they've tried different things in the past with, you know, giving technicals right away. That was, I don't know how many years ago that was. They tried to do that, and, you know, they had a tighter rein on what they would accept from the players, and it really hasn't worked. So I don't know what they do, but it just seems like there's got to be a solution to get these guys to.
So, hey, Mike, so the announcer curse got to Curry because, you know, how at the end of the first half he only had one foul, and the guy said, oh, he's done a really good job not getting foul trouble?
Yes.
He's got three fouls in the third quarter. He's now at four. He had to take him out of the game.
All right. Well, hey, come on, Houston.
Giving him still a 10-point game. Here's the problem, Mike. Who thought Andre Iguodala was going to play this well during this series?
Yeah, he's played really good tonight. He's played very, very well. He looks very, very spry.
He was 9-for-11 in between the two games.
If he's going to play well, you might as well just stick a fork in everybody, because there's no chance. If he's making shots, if he's running the break, if he's out defending, he just makes him so much better. When they weaponize him, it's lights out for everybody else, because you know what you're going to get from Durant at this point. Curry, even if he has a bad game, is going to get, you know, he's going to get 25 and have, you know, he's going to go 4-for-12 from three instead of 7-for-12 from three. And so Iguodala, if you get something from him, it's lights out.
Well, so they just called back-to-back fouls on Draymond, so Draymond might have four now too. I don't know. It's interesting. I told you that I was going to try to go to bed, but I'm probably going to stick it out now, because it's an intriguing game going on right now, Mike. And
I'll probably stay up and see the end of it too. So we'll be a couple of late night owls here checking out the end of the NBA game. So to everyone out there, thanks for sticking up with us tonight. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.